Please open your Bibles again to Job 20. Job chapter 20, and again, that's page 435 in the church Bibles. Job chapter 28. It's very different from what comes before it and then also what comes after it. It's different in both tone and then also form. Indeed, it's so different that some think that it's an editorial addition rather than Job continuing on from chapter 27. The publishers of our ESVs assume that it's Job. Job continues. Where is wisdom? There's debate about it. There's no need to fight over it. Whether it's an editorial addition or Job continuing on from what he has said in chapter 27. It's definitely in a different gear. Is he now out of breath? Wept out? What's really important is to realize that Job 28 is in the right place. The Spirit speaks intentionally. We can't always work out what his intentions are, but his intentions in putting chapter 28 here through his servant Job or an editor aren't difficult to work out. Job has suffered the most inexplicable cocktail of evils. He has lost 7 sons and 3 daughters. He's lost his wealth too. And that all in one foul sweep, one foul night. His wife says to him, "Curse God and die." Then 3 friends visit. Initially, they just sit and weep with Job. But as Job cries out for answers, these 3 friends, they aggravate his agony with explanations and answers that appear good and true from their perspectives. But those explanations and those answers don't fit the facts, not as Job knows them. He's an innocent man and he knows it, not pure, but still innocent. And chapter 28 is, it's a turning point for Job in the book. It's not the turning point. The turning point comes later, but it is a turning point, a significant turning point for Job. Because from chapter 29 onwards, Job seeks answers from only one source. Yes, another 4th and younger friend pitches up and he takes the mic too. He has his say. But from chapter 29 onwards, Job seeks answers from the only one source, God. And chapter 28 tells us why. What will it take you to go directly to the Lord with your big questions? Big questions rooted in your own suffering and your bitter disappointments, or perhaps big questions rooted in others' suffering and bitter disappointments. What will take you to go to the Lord? How about comfortable friend without a care in the world? What about you? What will it take for you to turn to God? Will Job chapter 28 do the trick? Job, and that's who I'm assuming, speaks in chapter 28. And again, no need to fight over this. Job, in chapter 28, and this is just introductory comments, just laying out the landscape in a bird's eye view. All right, he looks in turn at first mankind, amazing mankind, and then he turns to creation somewhat tangentially, but still significantly, and then finally, and very briefly, he looks at the afterlife, or at least listens to the afterlife. And he comes to one conclusion. Wisdom and understanding. That's seeing things as they really are and knowing why they are as they are. At least that, I think, is perhaps I could give a big, long, wordy, Doyle-like, incomprehensible, all right, and not incomprehensible in the sense that God is the incomprehensible that just leaves everybody confused. I could have come up with a nice long definition, but I've decided on simply this because I think this is what Job is focusing on. Wisdom and understanding, that's seeing things as they really are and knowing why they are as they are, is found in God alone. Salvation from lives of hell, or simply salvation from living a lie, lies not so much in getting answers to our questions, but respectfully and sincerely casting our souls on the God who knows all. That's what Job chapter 28 is all about. Now we get to it proper. All right, the chapter has three parts. I think there are six paragraphs in the ESV as we have it before us, but there are essentially three parts to Job chapter 28. The first part, verses 1 to 11, starts with the words, "Surely there is a mine for silver." The second part, verses 12 to 19, starts with two questions. But where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? And then the third part, verses 20 to 28, repeats the same questions, but with emphasis, and then also with a very slight twist. From where then does wisdom come, Job asks, and where is the place of understanding? Now those three sections, or parts, to chapter 28, they deal with the following three themes. There's something to celebrate. Secondly, but something's missing. And then thirdly, where that something missing is actually found. First then, verses 1 to 11, there's something to celebrate. We could also title this section, "The Admirable Securing the Valuable." Are you impressed by mankind? The human race? We're obviously allowed to be impressed, given verses 1 to 11. Many people think that Christianity has a very dim view of the human race. Well, it does. It has a very dim and grim view of the human race, but not completely. So, if you met an alien in outer space, as we do, if you met an alien from outer space, how would you promote or boast about mankind? How would you promote mankind's intellectual and creative prowess? Well, Job uses something that was impressive in his day. That's 4,000 plus years ago. He uses something that demonstrated mankind's technological and industrial know-how. He turned to something that's no less impressive today, and that's despite methods, modern methods, and modern means. He turns to something that's peculiarly adapted to address the actual commodity that's in view, and that's wisdom. And what is wisdom? Well, wisdom is something else. It's something that is valuable and priceless. It's something that is sought after. But I'm running ahead of myself, all right? To cut to the quick, what is Job's example? Well, it's mining. You already know that. At least you should have picked it up as we read the chapter earlier. Mining. There are three little subparts to it. The first one's the biggest. Verses 1 to 6. So we're looking at verses 1 to 11. All right, verses 1 to 6 provide a graphic opening description of ancient mining. Simply the what and the why. The what of mining and the why of mining. All right. Now, this description will be built upon as we move past verse 6. It'll be built upon. And this is striking. I think this is really, really striking. The description that Job gives us is as valid now as it was in Job's day. The Doyles lived close to Johannesburg, a center, perhaps the center of gold mining on the face of the earth. We weren't far away from the Cullinan mine where the greatest diamonds have been found. The most expensive diamonds, all right? Here, it would be coal up in Newcastle, perhaps the tin mines down in Cornwall. I hope I'm not betraying my ignorance here, all right? But these words could be applied to a mine down the road. Surely there is a mine for silver, Job says, and a place for gold that they refine. Iron is taken out of the earth and copper is smelted from the ore. Man puts an end to darkness. That's the darkness below ground where light normally doesn't penetrate, where light can't penetrate, unless, of course, it's opened up and torches or modern lighting light it up. So man puts an end to darkness and searches out the farthest limit. He goes as far as is practically possible and searches out to the farthest limit, the ore. What's the ore? Well, that's the stuff, the raw stuff from which the silver and the gold, the iron and the copper are obtained. He searches out to the farthest limit, the ore in gloom and deep darkness. There might be torches and there might be fluorescent lighting fluttering. But it's not lit by that bright, expulsive light of the sun. Verse 4, he opens shafts in a valley away from where anyone lives. They are forgotten by travelers. Where are the big mines in Australia? They're hundreds of kilometers north of Perth. They're up in the mines, or rather the mountains behind Sydney. Mines are often in remote places. Not always, but often. It was the same in Job's day. They. Now, this is the miners. They hang in the air, far away from mankind. Again, remoteness. And they swing to and fro. What's in view here? Well, we need to imagine holes or shafts dug into the ground, deep vertical shafts, with miners suspended on ropes, perhaps in baskets in those days, working away at rich seams around them. Verse 5, as for the earth, now this appears to be the surface ground, given what follows, all right? As for the earth, out of it comes bread. We're not talking about loaves of bread, rather we're talking about the products of agriculture that make bread, or which are used in the making of bread. We're talking about bread. Give us our daily bread. We're talking about the wherewithal to live. But underneath, we're going underground again, it is turned up as by fire. You need to look at the commentators and the imaginations that come to bear on this. I think it simply means the deeper one goes, the hotter it gets. And that's both because of a lack of ventilation. It gets stuffy down there, a lack of ventilation, but also because of what miners call geothermy, or at least the experts who understand down there. Geothermy. What's geothermy? That's the heat in rock simply because of pressure. The rock is hot simply because of what's resting on it. There's an energy in it which creates heat, but then there's also, what do we all know, what do we all learn at school? There's that molten core with heat coming up. And if you go to a gold mine in the Witwatersrand, they spend millions in trying to cool the shafts and the tunnels, literally pouring ice down chutes to keep the mine safe for human presence. Geothermy. Now, Job has already mentioned the why of mining. Iron is taken out of the earth. That's verse 2. But look at verse 6. Its stones are the place of sapphires, and it has dust of gold. There's the reason for all the trouble. Now, verses 7 and 8, we're moving on, the second little part in this first part. Verses 7 and 8 build on what's said in verses 1 to 6. And they build on verses 1 to 6 by highlighting the uniqueness of mankind in going places that other creatures don't. I think it's simpler to just read it. Verse 7, that path, and this is talking about the path below the surface, the way that's been opened up by that shaft and perhaps tunnels coming off it. The path below the surface, no bird of prey knows, and the falcon's eye has not seen it. The proud beasts have not trodden it. The lion has not passed over it. Above it, yes, but not actually on it. The lion has not trod the path below the surface. The last part, verses 9 to 11, those three verses, the description of mining builds further. Job's description. And here he refers to the industrial scale and the amazing inventiveness of mankind in mining. Those things are brought into view. The industrial scale and the amazing inventiveness of mankind in mining. Verse 9, man puts his hand to the flinty rock and overturns, look at that word, overturns mountains by the roots. And he cuts out channels in the rocks, and his eye sees every precious thing. Diamonds, sapphires, gold, silver, platinum. Those valuable minerals that are phones need. Verse 11. He dams up the streams so they do not trickle, and the thing that is hidden he brings out to light. Now, is Job launching into new areas of human endeavor? You know, dam building. The Italians, famous for dam building across the world. Perhaps is this just a somewhat ambiguous, but a reference to what we would call scientific research, the thing that is hidden he brings out to light. No, I don't think so. I suspect that Job still has mining in view. He's talking about the plugging of underground streams in the mines, streams that must be held back if that which is hidden is to be safely and successfully brought out from below to the light of the day above. I think mining is still in view. But the long and the short of verses 1 to 11 is this. The human race is capable of extraordinary things. And Job showcases mining, doesn't he? I'm sure he could have used other examples. He's just turned to one. We, moderns, can certainly turn to other examples, can't we? Vehicles, aircraft, space rockets, mobile phones. And what about those medical advances that secure the valuable commodity, or commodities, plural, of better living and longer lives? The issue is this. There is much to celebrate when one looks at the human race and its achievements. But something's missing. Verses 12 to 19. Something's missing. We're turning now from the admirable, securing the valuable, to the priceless and the absolutely essential. And Job identifies it up front. But where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? Wisdom. Understanding. That's seeing things, at least in this context, seeing things as they really are and knowing why they are as they are. Job's using those two words as exact synonyms. Notice how Job uses the singular in verse 13. Here's my defense of saying he's using wisdom and understanding as exact synonyms. Notice how Job uses the singular in verse 13. Verse 13, man does not know, not their worth, its worth. That's wisdom and understanding. And it, again, wisdom and understanding is not found in the land of the living. What? Not found in the land of the living? Are you joking? Surely that's not true, given mankind's achievements. We'll come back to this. You see, Job continues. He's not finished. Wisdom and understanding, real wisdom and real understanding, aren't just not found amongst the living. They're not found in creation either. Verse 14. The deep, and that's, Hebrews would have used the word deep for an ocean. The deep, that's the ocean, says, it is not in me. And the sea, the Hebrew there would refer to a shallower but still expansive stretch of water. The Mediterranean Sea, we still use the same distinction. the Pacific Ocean and the Baltic Ocean? No, it's the Baltic Sea. We do patronize the ancients, you know. But the sea also says, it's not with me. Moving on to verse 15. In verse 15, Job returns to the matter of mining, but he's more specifically, he's actually focusing not on the act of mining, but what's gotten out of mining, what mining yields. And he also turns to a number of other valuable commodities, things gotten from the sea, valuable things gotten from the sea. Valuable commodities, the values of which, and this is his point, the values of which pale into insignificance compared to wisdom and understanding. And his point, before we read it, his point is simple. Wisdom and understanding are unavailable. 15, it, that's wisdom and understanding again, singular. Forgive me when I use the plural, are, instead of is. It sounds a bit odd, doesn't it? Anyway, it, that's wisdom and understanding again. It cannot be bought for gold, and silver cannot be weighed as its price. It cannot be valued in gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Gold and glass cannot equal it, nor can it be exchange for jewels of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral from the sea or of crystal. The price of wisdom is above pearls. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. So let's just stand back a bit. All right, so wisdom and understanding can't be found among the living. Wisdom and understanding can't be found in creation either. Now, yes, I know. Only the deep and the sea offer their testimony. But being the last places one would look for wisdom and understanding, they speak for the whole of creation. In other words, having looked everywhere else, wisdom and understanding aren't even found in them. We always say we always find what we're looking for in the last place. Well, you get to the last places on the face of the earth and they turn around and say, it's not here. They speak for the entire creation. So the conclusion is obvious, right? As desirable and valuable as wisdom and understanding is, I've got it right this time, it cannot be bought, not at any price. Job has set us up for the third and the last section or part of chapter 28. Verses 20 to 28, they deal with where wisdom and understanding is found. From where then does wisdom come, and where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all the living. We've heard this before. It wasn't a slip of the quill or the chisel. It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Ah, the deep and the sea do speak for all creation. And the birds add their voice now. And they say, it's not with us, nor can we see it. But there's another testimony too, and that's the afterlife. Verse 22, Abaddon, and that word literally or simply means destruction. It means other things, but its essential meaning is destruction, and probably here it's referring to the decay and the dissolution of the body in the grave. The destruction of death, Abaddon, and death say? We have heard a rumor of it with our eyes, or rather our ears. We have heard a rumor of it with our ears. We'll come back to this again towards the end. Hopefully you're asking, we're all asking, where else can one go? Options, all options have been exhausted. The living, the dead, creation. But Job is where he needs to be. He's where we all need to be. In fact, he's the one who's taken us with him to this point. Verse 20 again, from where then does wisdom come and where is the place of understanding? Jumping to verse 23, God understands the way to it. Again, the singular, and he knows its place. Strange way of speaking this, isn't it? Somewhat indirectly, and that's an understatement, Job is pointing at God as the source of wisdom and understanding. All right? And we almost don't notice it, but what follows proves the point, and we'll get there. Here's just a little illustration. Troops tasked with catching Athanasius. This is in the 4th century. Troops, imperial troops, tasked with catching Athanasius, the bishop of Alexandria, that troublesome bishop. They're heading up the Nile at the same time as he's coming down the Nile to get away. And as the two parties cross, now I don't know whether the troops were in a flotilla. Haven't a clue. I'm not sure whether Athanasius was in a flotilla. But you've got either two boats or two flotillas or a boat and a flotilla. And these troops ask, where is Athanasius? And Athanasius apparently replies, he is not far off. I hope you catch the connection. All right? God understands the way to it and he knows its place. All right? Here's my thesis. Wisdom and understanding isn't so much located somewhere, but rather possessed by someone, and that's God. God understands the way to it because he possesses it. Look at Job's words. For, verse 24, for he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. When he gave to the wind its weight and apportioned the waters by measure, when he made a decree for the rain and a way for the lightning and the thunder, then he saw it and declared it. He established it and searched it out. It's not God, and yet it is God. Let's stand back again briefly. The focus here on what we might dismissively call the weather, what the English speak about, the weather. The focus here on what we might dismissively call the weather is as deliberate as the earlier references to the deep and the sea. The choice is deliberate. If there's something we live with on a daily basis and yet struggle to predict, let alone control, it is the weather. It's literally something we step aside for and say, after you, don't we? Yet, and this is the point, Job's point, the weather, it isn't unpredictable to God. It's under his control. He's the one who has given weight to the wind. And that's that pressure that we feel on our faces or on our bodies, particularly when the wind is hard, heavy. He's the one who apportioned the waters by measure. That's where they could and could not go. And when rain falls, and how much rain falls, it's all his doing. In fact, it's his decree. And the way that lightning strikes, that millisecond jagged journey, It's His doing. But most important of all, we've got to the climax of the chapter. Most important of all, the same God who knows all because He sees all, who has made all and controls all, He has spoken. Verse 28, and He said to man, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to turn away from evil is understanding. What a way to end. Let's revisit the logic of the chapter. Verses 1 to 11 start off with, surely there is. And then an inspiring description of mankind's achievements in the area of mining follows. It's just one example of what is a veritable catalogue of amazing technology advancing and wealth creating achievements. You cannot stamp out the Creator God from His creature. As nasty as that creature gets. Verses 12 to 19, moving on, they start off with, but where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? And here possibilities are extended from mankind to creation, and the answer is a resounding and a disheartening nowhere. Indeed, it's a resounding and a disheartening nowhere at any price. And then finally, verses 20 onwards, they start with, from where then does wisdom come, and where is the place of understanding? And the afterlife now adds its testimony. Are you following Job's logic? Humanity, even impressive and gifted humanity, cannot help. Creation can't help either. Scientific breakthroughs, when you bring mankind and creation together, scientific breakthroughs that sending probes into outer space, and then also greater understanding of what they call the code of life, DNA, they can't help. More, the afterlife, abandon and death, they can't help. As clever and as ingenious as man is, wisdom eludes him. As rich as man can get, wisdom eludes him. Money might get you into university. It might get you into the best of universities. It might fuel the most impressive of careers. But it cannot buy wisdom. As wonderful as creation is, it cannot offer wisdom. And as unknown and as foreign as the afterlife is to every one of us seated here tonight, it has no more than just heard of wisdom, and that by way of rumor. In other words, passing from this life into the next is not going to help. And calling on the dead from this life won't help either. Getting the message. We make a very big mistake when we equate or when we blur the line between inventiveness and cleverness on the one hand and wisdom and understanding on the other hand. Being technical able and technologically advanced never made any society wise, only clever. And we make another big mistake, thinking creation is a source of wisdom. You know, deferring to Mother Earth and that nonsense. Yes, creation is repeatedly marshaled or referenced in wisdom's syllabus. What does wisdom say? Go to the ant, etc. But that's not because creation is a source of wisdom. Rather, it's because creation illustrates wisdom, the wisdom of the one who made it, who upholds it, and who knows it inside out. And if we want to tap into the wisdom and understanding displayed in creation, if we simply want to take refuge in it, think of where Job is. Big, big questions. If we want to tap into the wisdom and understanding displayed in creation, or better, simply take refuge in it, we need to go to the Creator and the Sustainer of all things. We need to go to God. And not banging our fists or shaking our fists. Look at Job's words. We need to go humbly, putting what he has said first. Notice how Job ends. He ends with God, quoting God. There's been a lot of opinion in the chapters of Job before chapter 28. Indeed, it's jolly unsettling if you really look at it honestly. It's unsettling how Job's three friends appeal to things like experience, dreams, or the fathers, what the fathers thought. In other words, tradition. Why is Job turning tack? He's been heading this way all the way along. To this point of turning. Why is he now going to only take his case to God? It's because the only thing that matters is what God has said. And when it comes to life's big questions, more particularly when we cry out like Job, why? We need to remember God has spoken. I think it's Bill Hughes I heard this from the first time. We must not forget in the dark what we knew in the light. Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to turn away from evil is understanding. Does that answer disappoint you? Does what God say disappoint you? You see, the resolution of our perplexing situations this side of the grave and glory doesn't lie in getting answers to our questions. It lies in first sincerely bowing before the God who is God over all. And I say sincerely, I'm trying to catch this. This sermon was way too long. It's too long already. It was even longer. All right. I say sincerely, just to pick up on that second thing that God has said to man, and to turn away from evil is understanding. A sincere fear hates what God hates and wants to run from it. Why should we do that, you might ask? Surely he should give answers before he expects us to do that. Well, there's at least one reason to simply bow in humble submission and not expect answers. We wouldn't understand the answers. And there's a subtlety in this chapter that we don't see in the English. Apparently, it's a Hebrew. Well, it's not a Hebrew subtlety. It would jump out, subtlety. It would jump out if we knew Hebrew, apparently. Anyway, the word wisdom in verses 12 and 20, it has the definite article. In other words, in the Hebrew, it's the wisdom. Verse 12, but where shall, now it's going to be hard on English ears, and that's why they didn't put the definite article in. Where shall the wisdom be found? Moving down to verse 20. From where then does the wisdom come? And yet in verse 28, there's no definite article. It's as we have it in English. Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. Does this suggest, I think it does, that there are two different types of wisdom in view? The former, the wisdom, is God's alone. It's that understanding of the inner and the hidden order of the universe from outside of the universe. And the second type of wisdom is the wisdom that simply casts itself on God in humble and obedient trust. It's still the same type of wisdom. It's just truncated. It's seeing things as they really are. In other words, beyond our comprehension. And being willing to wait. Being willing to wait for a partial, and it will always only be partial, a partial rollout, because how can the finite grasp the works of the infinite? That's why glory is eternal. We shall never cease learning. And lest any think that just bowing, humbly submitting to God, to the Lord, is just pure capitulation, I want you to notice how such submission is far from passively silent. Look at chapter 29, verse 1. And Job again took up his discourse and said, I will not proceed. The issue is this, all right? Reading. Job doesn't stop asking, ruminating. Ruminating and asking, wrestling. The issue is he simply asks directly, and he does it remembering who God is. So, have you got to the point of surrendering to God? Have you got to the point of despairing in human ability and in creation and even the afterlife of answering your big questions? Because you need to. The writing, as we say, or as Scripture says, is on the wall. It's no good denying or arguing it away. Mankind is quite obviously not capable of saving itself. Job doesn't paint a picture of the horrible mess that mankind is. The Old Testament tells us quite eloquently outside of Job. Well, the three friends weren't that great, were they? Mankind is quite obviously not capable of saving itself, and creation is mute when it comes to answering life's bigger questions. And that's irrespective of the number of probes we send out into outer space trying to get asteroid dust to explain the origins of reality, or undertaking more and more studies into the origin and purpose of life this side of the clouds. Help and perspective must come from outside, mustn't they? And they do. They come from this word, which is from another world. But we need more than simple help and perspective. We need salvation. Deliverance from this evil agent world. And it too must also come from outside. And it has. It's come in the person of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, become man. Job looked forward to his day. We've seen it. Unbelieving friend. Fearing God might be as foreign to you as the state you are currently in is as foreign to me, having believed over 40 years ago. But the first step you need to take is to take to heart what God says to you through Job. Read the writing on the wall and put two and two together, but not apart from the finest and the clearest revelation of God that exists, and that's Christ. And I haven't spent enough time on Christ. Christ, Paul calls him wisdom from God, righteousness and sanctification and redemption. You look at God in Christ and the fear will come. And you will find that it's not nearly as grim or unrewarding as you think. Just look at the Lord's words through Job. Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to turn away from evil is understanding.